from a galaxy far, far away.
And a bookshelf straight out of the 90s.
From Thrawn to Dantooine.
And everything in between. This is Legends Look Back.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Legends Look Back, proudly part of the Youtini Podcast Network. This is a Star Wars books podcast for people who do dance parties to a goofy movie soundtrack, you know, all the time, where we celebrate the Star Wars expanded universe and expand your universe one episode at a time. I'm your host, Jared Mace, and I'm joined tonight by my legendary co-host, Singular. They're dropping like flies, y'all. That's because Freddie C. is out on his honeymoon. Well wishes, Freddie. Have fun, buddy. Congratulations. But tonight I have Rick Race. Well, I thought I had Rick Race. It's just me, apparently.
Okay. I'm here too. But yeah, we're not dropping like flies. I figured I had to have a big enough personality for at least three of us. So, no,
there are three of us. Actually, there's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
We did a fun special behind the scenes secret recording nobody knows about yet. Shh, keep it a secret, everybody. Featuring all four of us for the first time in months. And at a project yet to be announced, but very excited. Very excited.
It's about Star Trek.
It's not, unfortunately, for Rick, but fortunately for all the rest of us. Anyway, very excited about that. We'll tell you more about it when we can, but for tonight, we went from four to two. Just like that. But speaking of two, we are talking about two books tonight, Rick.
Yes. It is a duology of books, you could say.
So many ologies Legends Look Back.
It is
so many. In fact, I've got some spicy takes on this tonight. I know that you do, too. In fact, we were having some nice spirited debates before the show, and then finally I had to say the magic words that I eventually have to say before every single episode, which is...
Save it for the show.
Save it for the show, buddy. But also, 3, 2, 1, hit that red button so we can record the show. And here we are. That is tonight. We are talking about the New Jedi Order books. What is this? 7 and 8?
I don't know.
There's a bunch of them.
I lost count.
We are now...
We're in the middle of it.
We're in the thick of it. That's where we are. We're in the thick of it. I would call this right before the precipice of Star by Star. Star by Star is probably the turning point of the New Jedi Order. There's some big stuff happens in that book. And these books are what, Rick? What are we reading?
Yeah, so we're in Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory, 1, Conquest, and 2, Rebirth. So yeah, nice duology, and of course the names are 25,000 syllables long, but it's great. And so yeah, this is two books, Conquest and Rebirth, both written by Greg Keyes, both published in 2001. So, man, it's been a minute for sure.
Now, are these Greg Keyes' first Star Wars books? I know that he also writes another New Jedi Order book, The Final Prophecy, which is the penultimate book, the prequel to the finale of the New Jedi Order. New Jedi Order Book 18, The Final Prophecy. But besides these three, I'm not aware of any others. Now, there are multiple Star Wars Gregs. There's also Greg Bear. That's a different guy, different Greg. Unless it's the same Greg writing under a pseudonym. Pretty sure they're different Gregs. Anyway, this is a great Greg. Way to go, Greg. Love your books.
Good job, Greg.
Excellent books. Can't wait to praise one and absolutely eviscerate the other. So, now, here's a crazy thing. These books almost didn't exist, Rick. You know some of the behind the scenes on these?
No, not until I read the notes.
That is, these were a replacement for what was, at one point, slated to be the Nightfall trilogy. Nightfall, of course, we talked about on our infamous, the much maligned and also acclaimed episode of Legends Look Back, in which we talked about all the Star Wars books that almost existed, or perhaps exist somewhere in somebody's basement. The books that were planned, announced,
Trevor's basement.
and or written. You know what's funny is he actually does have some of them. And
yes, I know.
He actually does have some of his PDFs, and you know. Anyway, it's super secret. How did he get them? Who knows? He probably has a pirate ship out there, and
most definitely.
What is it? The Gulf of Wales? What do you call that? The ocean by Wales?
I don't know.
He'll let us know in the Discord. But
he will.
This is a trilogy that was slated for release. In fact, according to legend, and I love that Legends has legends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Exactly.
According to legend, with Nightfall, the first one was written. The first Nightfall book, this is the art for those who are watching on YouTube. This is the artwork for Jedi Storm. Rick, describe this artwork. Paint a picture for the folks who are driving their dogs and walking their cars.
Yes. So it almost looks like The Little Mermaid.
didn't see that one going.
Yeah. You got a... I don't even know who these are supposed to be, but there's a male figure with dark hair.
Jor-Allen.
Okay, Jor-Allen. Is that two syllables, like Jor-Allen or Jor-Allen?
That's three syllables. Do you know how syllables work? Do you mean
names? You know, I've been in trouble with that lately, so yes, I'm struggling.
According to the book, that's one name,
Jor-Allen. Clap them out. Okay.
No, now they teach you to use your arm, Rick. You use your arm for...
Sure. Arm?
Syllabi.
And like, just beat yourself or what? Like, how does this work?
We're not beating anything on this podcast, buddy. Move along.
Yes, okay. Also on this art, there is a lovely female with blonde hair.
Dani Qui, I believe.
Oh, that's Dani Qui. I know that one. Okay.
Yeah, she got that scientist glow up.
Whatever. Yeah. And then there's... what's the character from Mermaid? What's the bad girl?
Ursula?
Guy? Ursula, yeah. I'm getting Ursula vibes from...
Hashtag girl dad.
whatever's going on in the background.
Yeah, it's quite the... It's like Fabio and a beauty queen and the spookiest Yu Zhanvong mermaid. I like the purple. The purple kind of fits the Legends Look Back vibe we've got going. Anyway, it's a cool cover. It's what in the world was going on? Here's the plot synopsis for Nightfall 1. Nightfall was going to star the scientist Dani Qui and the Jedi Knight Jor-Allen, both of whom were caught up in the New Republic and the New Jedi Order's ongoing war with the extragalactic species of religious zealots known as the Yu Zhanvong. Now, that tells us next to nothing other than there were two characters.
That's fair.
But according to legend, Nightfall's cancellation has nothing to do with Nightfall, this quality of the work or lack thereof. But it was the result of a, spoiler-free, major decision regarding the character of Anakin Solo, and thus Greg Keyes was hired on to write the Edge of Victory duology to further develop the character of Anakin specifically. So, what could have been? Listeners, if you're out there and you've got a manuscript for Nightfall, Jedi Storm, let us know. We'd love to cover it on the show. And the listeners need to know. I mean, it's been long enough, don't you think, Rick? 2001?
It's time.
I mean, like, it's time to dig these suckers up. We got Heart of the Jedi a couple years ago. That was awesome. We're getting more and more of these things. There's the tremendous controversy surrounding supernatural encounters. That's a whole thing. It's time to unearth some of these buried properties. But let's talk about the books that were published. What do you say?
Sounds good.
How about first and foremost the cover art of the Edge of Victory duology? Of course, we've got two volumes, both published as paperbacks in 2001, then eventually a third volume, which is the Science Fiction Book Club hardcover. Now, first and foremost, the cover for Conquest. Rick, we got like a Medusa Yu Zhanvong. I assume it's one of the Shapers, right? Probably Ninyam.
Yeah, I probably would say it's Ninyam. Or, Ninyam. Because Vergeer is a different species.
And then we got, what's the shamed one with the, in the book? Man, these characters all have ridiculous
Numenor?
Names. No. Down in the corner, that's Anakin's bestie.
That's right. He had a name.
Yeah, it's in the show notes. He had a name, like the Jim Croce song. Love that. Long live Jim Croce. Jim Croce was a real one. I'm looking.
Ninyam.
No, that's a different one. Rapung. Vua Rapung. Yeah, if only Freddy was here. Freddy, we need you. He's very good at pronouncing names with a little ethnic flair.
I can tell you how my Scottish voice reads it, but it's not right.
Let's move along. It's like the time that I listened to some Star Wars books read by the voice of Snoop Dogg. That was a choice.
Yes.
I had a great time. Absolutely great time. We're going to talk about some of those books later. Which were the, I did the Junior Jedi Knights read by Snoop Dogg. That was fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
So, and then we've got Anakin who here in the, on the corner, he doesn't look as heroic as I wish he looked in the book. I mean, he can look however he wants in the book because it's just words. Anyway,
it's
I like the Moody cover, the dark green. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very mute colors, which, I mean, it's fitting. You don't want something bright and colorful and cheery. You want something that's kind of in a dirge, and the gray skin of the Yuuzhan Vong and the greens definitely work. I thought Anakin would be older, and so he looks a little young to me, but...
Well, if you wanted an older-looking character, let's look at the cover for Book 2, Victory. No, excuse me, Rebirth. Rebirth here. Oh, my eyes! I feel like Luke is done dirty here. What do you think?
Yeah, the butt chin is just too loud.
What if I told you that this is the second version of this cover? There was, in fact, an earlier version where Luke looks worse. Go to the Wook for that one. We're not going to subject our viewers to seeing this. If there's one where he looks, his head is like almost detached from his body. He's so depressed. But that's like plot point in the book. So he has an argument with Kip that Anakin says he feels like Luke was broken. And anyway, it's Luke looks sick, which is funny because Mara is in fact the one that's sick. However, shout out to Mara's guns. I'm not talking about the blaster that she's holding. No, I'm talking about what's holding the blaster. Describe her musculature, Rick.
She's holding the Skywalker family. but she's got some Xena warrior princess kind of wrist cuffs going on. And then there's definitely the curvature of what it is, bicep.
It's looking good, man. It is. Yeah. She is jacked. Absolutely.
Jared, you have really nice Mara Jade arms.
No, let's not make that a thing, please. I mean, maybe that's why she... The cat suit is a thing where she's always sleeveless because she's got great guns and she just has to show them off.
Yeah.
Which, like, hey, I don't blame her.
I love the face she's giving, though. Like, it's not a face of, like, intimidation. It's, like, the disgust of, like, why?
No, it's because Luke definitely just ripped one. He ripped a royal Jedi fart is what he did.
This is the face that I think of our friend Amelia gives me all the time.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Every time I mention your name. It's a similar face, I'm not going to lie. Similar face. We've got a mutual friend that knows us personally from different... Anyway, moving on. Great covers. Let's talk about the Japanese covers, because this is probably one of the greatest Japanese Star Wars book covers ever. Love both of these. Man. This one's fantastic. You've got the cover... Now, the other half, you got Luke with the middle part, like a Gen Z-er. Then the other half, you've got Anakin, Tahiri, and Ikrit. And
yes,
it looks fantastic against the light green, the Jedi bunny, so cool.
Yeah, that's a great
Tahiri in her orange, like she just busted out of prison.
Yeah, that's close up for you.
Love the zoom in with the star, the lens flare, like it's a J.J. Abrams movie. Fantastic.
That's right.
This I do prefer this version of Anakin. I love the look for him here.
Yes, absolutely. And Tahiri, too, it's a good visualization. Let's see.
This one. Nope. That's the one. This Japanese cover for Rebirth is, I think, one of the coolest Star Wars book covers of all time. There's a lot of purple. Han is grimacing. Lando's there. There's a lot happening. Spaceships.
There's a
tentacles.
Crossover with the Scream movie.
Yeah, I wasn't going to even begin to describe what this lady is doing. I'm not even sure who it is, but something's happening. Anyway, it's a very cool cover. Shout out again to the Japanese New Jedi Order covers. They're very cool.
Oh, man. That's incredible. There are depths, man, to this image.
There certainly are, my friend. But let's talk about the actual book. Let's get into it. This is The Point of No Return. And if you have not yet read the New Jedi Order, The Edge of Victory duology, Conquest and Rebirth. Listen, there's a lot of new Jedi Order books, and so I'm constantly having to keep them right on the desk to reference them. This is your chance to turn back, read the books, and I would highly, highly, highly recommend reading Edge of Victory 1, especially one of my favorite Star Wars books, and can't wait to talk about it tonight. So, let's get into it. I'll start with Conquest. Conquest! Here's what happens. Hellbent on the destruction of the Jedi Order after Jacen Solo defeated him in the preceding novel, Balance Point, Yuuzhan Vong, Warmaster Tsavong Law, incentivizes the Peace Brigade fleet to obliterate the Jedi at their home base, the Jedi Praxium on Yavin 4. Going renegade, Anakin Solo fears for his friends. Well, honestly, one in particular, the former Tusken Raider, his barefoot Jedi girlfriend, Tahiri Vela, who's still behind on Yavin 4 completing her training. The Peace Brigade kill Ikrit. I've got the wrong word here in the show notes. The Peace Brigade kill Ikrit. No, here we go. I'm misreading the sentence. The Peace Brigade kill Anakin and Tahiri's furry Jedi friend, Ikrit. Long story, Ikrit. That's in Junior Jedi Knights. We'll talk about it one day. And they captured Tahiri. Tahiri is experimented upon by Nin Yim, a Yuuzhan Vong shaper, and her master, Megan, or Mezon, anyway, brainwashing her into thinking that she is, in fact, a Vong herself. They want to form a Yuuzhan Vong Jedi Megazord, Tahiri, a Yuuzhan Vong who can use the Force. What could go wrong? Anakin, meanwhile, accidentally damages his lightsaber, escaping. Then a rogue Vong, Vua Rapung, saved him and tended his wounds. Rapung is one of the shamed ones, a deformed Yuuzhan Vong in its lowest social caste, who wants revenge against the Shapers who shamed him and deformed him. The unlikely pair team up, forge a beautiful friendship, disguise Anakin as a slave, discover lambent crystals Anakin is able to use as a new lightsaber crystal, and is able to use the crystal to detect Yuuzhan Vong as well. After some sneaking around, backstabbing, Tahiri decapitates her captor, but is changed forever by her experiences at their treacherous tentacled hands. They're eventually saved by Talon Card and Corrin Horn, and Conquest ends on a note of bittersweet love story, but also lots of heresy. Lots and lots of Yuuzhan Vong heresy. Let's move along to Rebirth, Rick.
Let's do that, guys. Let's do that. But seriously, though, if you haven't checked out Conquest, it's a great book, and Jaren has a quality summary that you should have been there for. but here we go. We're going to do the summary of Rebirth now. In the aftermath of the attack on Yavin 4, Luke and Mara flee the capital when Borsk Faelya orders Luke's arrest. They set up then a new Jedi base named Shelter Deep within the Maw installation, with a temporary home on board Booster Tarek Star Destroyer the Errant Venture. Nin Yim takes up the mantle of her recently deceased master, in which she begins to uncover shocking truths about the Yuuzhan Vong overlord, Shimra, which this is the Shaper we're talking about. She is assisted in her tasks by the Onimi, the Shamed One Jester, who serves Shimra. Kip Duran requests help from Jaina and Rogue Squadron to take out a Yuuzhan Vong superweapon at Cerbital. Then he asks Jaina to be his apprentice. So all kinds of interesting dynamics then. Turns out that Kip Duran is a dirty liar, and he was covering up the truth that the site is actually a ship womb, developing non-military ships with the non-military Yuuzhan Vong civilians. That was bad. But our other heroes are also lured into a trap at Yagdul to help save the Given species, and they challenge Namor to a duel, but he flees. And after some heroics, they escape as well. Finally, the climax of the book, Mara gives birth to her son, Ben Skywalker, combining hers and Luke's Force abilities with their emerging child to also rid her body of all the traces of the comb spore illness that she had.
Man, what a book. This is a lot happening.
Indeed. Yeah, it was a lot.
All right, so I've already spoiled it in the first half of the episode, which is, I think, Conquest is absolutely one of the greatest Star Wars books ever written. For me, it's top 10. It's probably a 9 out of 10, if not a 10 out of 10. And it's fantastic, spectacular. I think, however, Rebirth is a hot mess. It's well written. Like, the writing style's good, but there's so many plot points.
Yeah.
It is not top tier for me. I think Conquest, however, is. That's How fair. About you?
Yeah, I don't think I understood how much we were going to lean into Anakin on Rebirth. Or
Conquest.
Rebirth,
yeah.
The first one?
Yeah, yeah.
Which one's first?
Conquest.
Okay. Sheesh. Yeah, I didn't realize how much we're going to lean into Anakin, and so at first I was kind of like, I felt like I was reading another Junior Jedi Knight book, which is not a problem. I just was like, okay, this is interesting.
He leans hard into that. Yeah.
He does, for sure, which was great. I'm thankful that I did read that before we started this, because there was so much there that was like, oh, cool, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that book was spectacular. A lot of fun, really invested in this weird romantic connection between Tahiri and Anakin. And that was a fun little story to follow. And man, some great, great moments, some good character development and world building, all the things that are really good about Star Wars. And so it has it all. So yeah, it'd be an 8 or 9 out of 10, whatever word, adjective that corresponds to.
Yeah, that's like incredible to great. The cool thing is, this is something that's going to continue to recur throughout the New Jedi Order from here. You'll have one character-centric book. And so this is the Anakin book, and then Dark Journey is a Jaina book. Traitor is a Jason book. I had to look at the cover, see whose face is on it. And so they'll really focus, they'll eliminate everything else, and they'll go tunnel vision on one particular character. And I much prefer that approach to what we got in Rebirth, which was all of the plot lines and all of the characters in 300 pages. So, less than? Yeah, 292 flat.
But it did move pretty quick, and so that was nice. That, you know, I think I read those two books in like 2 or 3 weeks pretty quickly, so that was nice.
I did the two in 3 days.
Oh, nice.
But it was a reread. I knew it was happening. I knew it was happening in the first one. Oh, I could, even now, having read the second one twice, don't know what was happening.
Sheesh. And then I spent a day starting star by star, and I get 8 chapters in and realize I'm still in the prologue.
Yeah, you texted me about that.
I'm on like chapter 4 now, because I just am still in shock that I read an 8-chapter prologue. Like, that's crazy.
My first read-through of star by star took me months, which is why we had the entire summer break to read it. Because we do not have live shows for the rest of the summer, that we do have some other cool Legends Look Back content planned. So we're not going to leave our listeners hanging, but it takes some time to read that bad boy. But the real reason is Rick is very busy in the summer, and Freddie just got married.
I struggle with pressing the live go live button apparently. So we're going to give me some
practice. How many reps does he need, listeners? Before we go live again in the fall. But let's get into it. Obviously, the first book is did you want to give your rating on the second? Did you give that one yet?
I would give it, so we'll say masterpiece, I think, with the first one, and we'll do a solid good for the second one. Maybe great, but
yeah. It's good. I think the writing style is incredible, but
and Han and Leia have some great moments.
And there's some plot points that are set up. That, I mean, you don't see them yet because you haven't read the rest of the series. There's some plot points set up in Rebirth that are massive for where we're going in the rest of the series. So
that's good.
That's all I'll say about that. Back to Conquest. Let's talk about Anakin Solo. This is the book in which he really shines as a Jedi. And I would go so far as to say that Anakin Solo is among the truest embodiments of what it means to be a Jedi. What do you think about that? Do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it.
And in what ways does he do that?
I keep coming back to his problem solving. When he was on his own before Vua Rapong, yeah, before he comes into the picture.
Why do I have him with a French accent in my brain?
I don't know.
A Rylothian accent.
Yeah. Anyway, before he's really part of them as an ensemble, he has to survive by himself, and he makes some mistakes, but he's trying to do his best to listen to the Force, even though this whole Yuuzhan Vong are invisible in the Force, and it's really good. So he problem solves, he trusts the Force, but he also is somewhat respectful for life, and he has some moments where he causes some natural world suffering, and he grieves that and feels that, and so there's a lot of really admirable things. Like, he's a good character, and that's shown.
Yeah, I would say, okay, in addition to the problem solving, I think for me, I would put his empathy in connecting with the other beings, so not just people. So the fact that he's the first Jedi, I think, I could be wrong, because I very much compartmentalize these books. I believe he's the first Jedi to cross the bound, that border between the Jedi and the Yuuzhan Vong. There's this tremendous cultural separation between them. And it's not just that they're able to have a conversation, but it's that they're able to get on one another's level. And so there's some credit to Vua as well. And he's shamed and rejected and vengeful, therefore has a reason to want to get against back at the Shapers. But Anakin's able to begin to penetrate that cultural barrier and to figure out on the worldview level, what is it that makes you tick? And that to me is kind of like a Qui-Gon thing. Qui-Gon he'll relate to these species, these beings of all different sorts. And you hear Obi-Wan make a line about it in The Phantom Menace. Another one of these, what does he call them? Like pitiful creatures?
Something like that. Picked up another dependent.
Right.
Something.
Yeah. It's like, it's very imperial the way he's, you know, like, oh no, I can't believe you got another one of these stragglers. As if this has happened a bunch in their relationship, which we see some of in Legends in the Jedi Apprentice books, but largely kind of just have to interpret that this is something that Qui-Gon does. He's constantly relating to all different sorts of folks. And so I love that about Anakin. He's able to begin to penetrate. It's as if maybe the Yuuzhan Vong are largely misunderstood. That's all I'll say about that.
Interesting.
And so, but also villainous. And he has to explain to him, like, hey, coming into our galaxy and killing our people is not cool, dude. And he's like, oh, well, is it really that bad? You know, and so they have some good nuanced conversation. I also like what he does with the lambent crystals.
Oh, yeah.
We'll circle back to that
in
a bit. So Anakin, I would consider among Anakin Solo, one of the truest Jedi, one of the greatest embodiments of what it is to be a Jedi. So we would consider his empathy, his connection, and his problem solving up there. You know what's not so Jedi-like of him? His love life.
Hmm. Or is it?
In Legends, it flies. Yeah. Which is what I like. And this is the first introduction to Tahiri Vela in an adult Legends novel. Prior to that, she's been in the Junior Jedi Knights books, but this is her first introduction proper to adult Legends novels. She will forever, at this point on, be a staple among the core cast of characters. So it's really her introduction to the stage. Yeah, so with Tahiri, Rick, what do you think it will take for her to be able to triumph? She undergoes this horrible, traumatic experience here.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to take to overcome that and be able to push past that, you know, that psyche that's imbued into her, you know, brain as a result of her torture?
I'm not going to lie, man, that her character and the dynamic between her and Anakin, that's one of the storylines that's keeping me invested in this series one of the most, you know, like it's pretty strong. And so I honestly didn't know if she was going to be redeemable at the end of Conquest. And then it's still kind of a question mark, you know, what's going to happen, because she has struggles going forward, some relapses into Yuuzhan Vong mode. A little bit, but yeah, like that's complete, you know, PTSD and then some. She was reprogrammed.
You have no idea what's coming for her. It gets worse.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Yay. And so, man, good character. I'm excited.
Yeah. Also, now that Yutini has gone all in on feet, I will say, she's barefoot. There's a lot about her feet. So much to hear your feet. There's a lot of feet talk. And shout out to the Yutini show for always doing their YouTube videos in their bare socks. Yeah. The people want to see the feet, y'all.
The dogs are out, as they say.
My dogs are barking. yeah, and so if you want some feet, go to Legends and or the Yutini show. But there's so much that happens to her. And on a serious note, you know, the trauma that she undergoes is hard to even begin to process. They would imbue her with a psyche to experiment on her, and this is what they do. They'll give people another arm or tentacle fingers, or, you know, they're always trying to, you know, do the biotechnology experimentation. And
more tragic Yuuzhan Vong backstory.
Oh man, and they push that to a whole nother level with Tahiri, and it's horrible. And I love that Anakin is like, hey, we'll find a way to figure this out, and I'm here for you, and this is who you are. It's kind of a 50-50 first dates kind of a scenario there.
I also felt like it was kind of naive and, like, he's way over his head. It's kind of like slapping a bandaid on it, like, you're fine. Everything's fine. This is fine. You'll be good. You know, like, ignoring the dormant personality.
Yeah, there's so much happening with that. I can't even begin to scratch the surface on it. But it's a great character. I'm really glad that she emerges from the behind the scenes of Junior Jedi Knights and into the New Jedi Order proper. Let me ask you this. We'll jump out of order here. If you hadn't, Rick, read the Junior Jedi Knights books, do you feel like this book in particular, Conquest, would have left you hanging out to dry? Could you have figured out what was going on?
That's a really good question. I don't think I would have cared. I would have thought that adolescent Anakin is attracted to the first girl he meets. That's what it would probably feel like, you know, without the backstory of their friendship. And so it does kind of seem from that perspective, maybe, that it's like, this is the only girl his age-ish, and so he's got a crush on her, and so now he has to go rescue her. Like, that would be kind of how it would read, I'd imagine.
I feel like it's okay to say, hey, there's some other books, and it's about them training as kids, and they're best friends. And I mean, that's kind of all you need to know. My first read-through of New Jedi Order, I had not read Junior Jedi Knights, and I understood the book just fine. And I was like, oh, Ikrit, he's that furry rabbit from the covers of those books. I don't know anything about him, but I'm sure I'll read them one day. And I did, and I loved them, and I would actually consider them among the best Star Wars books of all time. But yeah, it does add a lot having spent some time with them, and now that culminates in Conquest. So shout out to Ikrit. Ikrit is a real one. He's one, however, that I will say, if you don't see him coming, you don't know that there's a furry little rabbit Jedi.
Yes. And again, knowing his story made that very powerful.
Yeah.
His sacrifice, loss, however we want to view it. But man, that was really good. Really good.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the villains here. Nin Yim, the Yuuzhan Vong Shaper. This is a new cast that's introduced here, which then adds a lot of flavor to the Yuuzhan Vong culture. I love Skooma Joe's comment from earlier, not the feet ones, moving up. Okay, so he says, at this point in the series, I was starting to feel like the Vong just had organic stand-ins for every basic tech device. But Conquest does so much for the Vong world-building. I love the Shapers. Love that comment. It's very true. The Shapers do add a lot of nuance and lore. And of course, her journey into the next book, discovering, the Overlord's been lying to us. There's a huge problem here. And then he's like, you know what? How about you come hang out with me because you know too much? And I'm not going to kill you, but I think you can help.
Yeah.
So the Shapers really do give another flavor to the previous established Yuuzhan Vong classes. Rick, how did the Shapers come off to you? You feel like this was a good addition to the Yuuzhan Vong lore, or have we gone way too deep down the rabbit hole with Vong stuff at this point?
Nope, I'm here for it. I'm ready for learning more about what they do in the other cast. I also like the Shame ones, you know, and learning about them and seeing the different stratification. But the Shapers are, it's interesting. Like, I still have so many questions about how they do and don't share knowledge. And it kind of reminds me of like spy agencies mixed with like R&D.
Okay.
You know, where like there are, you don't trust anybody, your secrets have secrets, and at the same time you're serving your people by developing state secrets kind of thing. You know, like it's I don't know.
I thought of it that way.
That's a weird way to describe it, but I really liked it. And there's a religious aspect to it.
Yeah, I do like that.
It's a little troubling, but it's cool.
You've got a lot of lore here, not just the Shapers added, but also the Shamed Ones. So we learn a little bit more about the Shamed Ones, the fact that it's not all, you know, hey, we're warriors and we're unified in purpose. In fact, there's castes that are not as happy with the other castes. In fact, there's rivalries within the castes and one caste against another caste. And now all I can hear is myself saying the word cast over and over and over. And I'm picturing like the ones you got in middle school where everybody signed them.
Right.
Different cast. That's
it's a splint and a cast and a...
So some interesting stuff added there with the Shamed Ones, the Shapers. You've got the gods and it gets complicated. I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert in these things. But you will be after you read all 19 books in the New Jedi Order. Let's move on to Kip Duran, or as you call him, Kip Duran.
Again, just how my reader has been reading it to me.
Okay, so Kip Duran, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, Rick. This is kind of an interesting philosophical debate. There's some really great philosophy in the New Jedi Order. Luke and Kip are on opposite sides of their approaches here. Kip Duran wants proactive action. Luke is more of like the old school Jedi philosophy of like Jedi just defend, never attack. In fact, his sleaziness, Kip's sleaziness, reaches new heights in this duology because he is wanting Jaina and the Rogue Squadron to help him obliterate what is essentially Yuuzhan Vong's civilians. He's discovered a ship well? What they call it? Ship womb.
Yeah,
a ship womb. They're building world ships, places for the Yuuzhan Vong to live. These are non-combatants. These are military, non-military civilians. Tricks them.
They're like invasive though. Like they still have a.
It's gray.
Yeah, it's definitely gray.
It's a gray area, but they're non-military. And Jaina is upset by that. He says it's a super weapon, which like, hey, great job, Kip. There's a lot of super weapons in Legends. You yourself drove one at one point.
And they all have been looking for some, thinking maybe that'd be handy right about now. But
sure. Hey, I feel like there's a super weapon under one of these rocks somewhere.
Yeah, where do we leave that Star Destroyer?
Anybody have an air tag? Yeah. Yeah. And so here we realize, okay, he's manipulating Jaina. Jaina does not take that well. Do you think, and we were talking about this some before the show, we're getting into some good stuff. Do you think his sleaziness is resultant of Luke's quick forgiveness and the lack of consequences, going back to the Jedi Academy trilogy here, okay, where Kip was first introduced, the lack of consequences for all of his bad behavior preceding this event? So the backstory there is he was possessed by a Sith Lord ghost, Exar Kun. It's not my fault. It was Exar Kun. But nevertheless, there's no consequences. He commits genocide. I mean, it's horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And Luke is like, hey, listen, it wasn't him. He was possessed. The galaxy wants to see him incriminated, put on trial. Luke lets him off the hook. There's no penance. And long story short, now Kip's a jerk. I'm of the opinion here. Now, both of us coming from Christian theological perspectives, go ahead and put that out on the table, play all of our cards here. I think, from my perspective, Kip is an example, prime example, of what we might call cheap grace. This idea that because he has not experienced consequences for his actions, he doesn't have respect for the gravity of the situation, for the gift he's received from Luke Skywalker in being let off the hook. He deserves a life sentence for what he's done. He doesn't appreciate that. He rubs it in Luke's face, and his attitude is abhorrent. And I think it's a prime example of that taken to its extreme. All right, what do you think?
Yeah.
Are you with me on this? I don't think we quite see it eye to eye.
Yeah, so way to break out the Bonhoeffer there. Pretty good.
Somebody had to do it, Rick.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, so for me, up until this point, Kip has been all words and no action that has really been like that bad. Like, I get it. His perspective is be more aggressive in the war. But he's done some things, but he hasn't really stirred the pot in a major way. But this is a kind of a major way. This is when he starts to really, like some of you guys have said in the comments, like it's a point of no return. He crosses the line. And so I think that phrasing of looking at how the events with Luke forgiving him and the way that discipline was handled, maybe that is what's influencing him and it's making him not appreciate the second chance that he's been given.
Yeah, so he thinks he can get away with anything. And so if you don't appreciate the consequences of your actions, if you think your actions have no consequences, you'll do whatever you can get away with.
Yeah.
And therefore, bad behavior is resultant from grace. We think grace is a good thing. Like, let's give people forgiveness. Let's give them second chances. It can go too far. Sometimes we need to be hit in the face with the consequences of our actions and have to make atonement. And so I would have liked to have seen him have to make some penance, whether that's like write apology letters to the families of all the kids he murdered on Corita, or I don't know what that would look like.
20 break out the propitiation too, or are we just going to move along?
This is my favorite word, propitiation. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Interesting point here from Skooma, I think, is worth noting. He says, I can't remember if we talked about this, but I felt like Kip's role in New Jedi Order was meant to be an original character that they just applied to Kip. It doesn't feel like a natural continuation for me. The next comment then is also good. Kip was, you know, if you know the whole story, Kip was very ashamed of his actions in the Jedi Academy Leviathan. That's a Dark Horse comic. I believe we covered it here on the show at one point. So I can see that there's some discontinuity with the character from what happened before. Nevertheless, this is where we are. And so we've got to interpret what's in front of us. And so, however, the behind the scenes of what made Legends Legends for me is part of what makes Legends just great. It's so wacky.
Yeah, that's fair.
Absolutely. So, talked about Kip, Anakin, Tahiri, Nin Yim. Who else deserves a moment in the under the Yavin suns here? Shimra and Omini? What were your initial impressions of them, Rick?
Well, I've been wanting to know what's the big picture for the Yuuzhan Vong. You know, who are the real people who have power pulling the strings? And I don't know if this even answers those questions. But yeah, Shimra, what is his title? Supreme Commander?
Supreme Overlord. I tried to get that added to my business card, but they just put Lead Pastor, so
you know,
I'll take it.
You do what you do. I tried for Grand Moff, but that also was shut down. I think Grand Admiral might have another.
I think get you some of those bars with the colors on your shirt.
What are they called? Epaulets, and I get all my insignia.
Rank insignia,
phrasing.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So yeah, that was cool, but I want to know more. So they kind of just teased it a little bit. And then Omini, he was the jester character, right? Who's I can't remember how you first introduced to him.
So he's assigned to assist Nin Yim as she's then recruited to work for Shimra in unlocking, what is it, the eighth cortex of the Shimra knowledge. So she's now the leader of the Shapers. She was apprenticed to Megan. Maison? I keep calling her Megan.
And then, yeah.
These are names I've never had to say out loud. They've just been in my brain for years.
Right? So he's the one who comes after her and is a complete imbecile on the surface, right?
Yeah. He's like the Kowakian monkey lizard of the Yuuzhan Vong.
Yep. And so she's actually planning to kill him because he's incompetent. You know, that's the role he's playing. And he actually is not just this nobody character. He actually is the right-hand man of Shimra.
So you think there's more than meets the eye there with Omini?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad we finally get introduced to them. I was surprised that we're like 8 books deep into the New Jedi Order, and we just finally met the Emperor of the Yuuzhan Vong, the Supreme Overlord. It's always one of those things that for me is surprising that in the original Star Wars trilogy, you don't meet the Emperor proper until Return of the Jedi. I mean, you get one scene with his hologram in Empire. And even then in the original, that was a monkey-eyed woman. And so it's crazy that you don't meet the Emperor until the climax of the trilogy. And so this does kind of follow that suit, that like there's a slow burn to build up. You spend some time with Sevong La, and he's really upset, but you realize he's not quite the top of the totem pole. But one more character worth the spotlight here in our coverage of the Edge of Victory duology, and that is Ben Skywalker, a name I'm getting to say for the first time on Legends Look Back. Ben Skywalker makes his emergence into the galaxy far, far away by way of an extremely creepy scene, or perhaps cool, depending on your take. Rick, what's your take? The scene in which Luke, Mara, and baby Ben unite their powers to use the Force to cast the comb spore virus out of Mara. Is it cool or is it creepy, Rick?
I probably read it too quickly to really grasp the fullness of that moment, but I remember it definitely felt weird. Like I was in an intimate moment that I should not have been part of.
Should I really let readers in the room for this?
Yeah,
can I slip the umbilical cord?
And so, yeah, I mean, it's beautiful as a family and how they're coming together and how the Force, you know, joins them. But it felt like, I don't know, just the corny trope of like everyone has to hold hands and work together to,
like, how do you portray a Jedi birth? It's got to be epic. I think it was an attempt at that. Though it's admittedly not necessarily extremely successful in my mind, but it is a book that when I look at the cover, the first thing I think about every single time is, oh, that's the book Ben was born in. Ben is not developed a whole awful lot in this series. He is a little bit later on, but then it becomes more and more of a character in Legacy of the Force and Fate of the Jedi. That's all I'll say about that. Love this comment from Skuma when I read New Jedi Order in 2022 by sheer coincidence. It happened to be Mother's Day when I read the part in Rebirth with Ben's birth, which was neat. Shout out to all the moms out there. Mom squad, rise up. You're out there walking your car and driving your dog with your mom. Shout out to you. And I've said that wrong twice now on the show, haven't I? So, a couple overarching questions before we call it quits tonight. And that is Anakin Lambent Crystal. I love this little lore bit here. Anakin harnesses the Lambent Crystal, communication crystals or light sources grown from Yuuzhan Vong fruit, and he uses it for his lightsaber. And this is cool. Now, Rick, I wanted you to speculate a little bit here, not having read the series yet. How else do you think the Jedi or the New Republic can repurpose the Yuuzhan Vong biotech for their purposes? So here's an example of taking basically what a light bulb and using it as a lightsaber crystal. How do you think then? What else could they do? We've seen a lot of Yuuzhan Vong biotech. Think outside the box.
Interesting. Yeah, I've not thought about this at all. So my first thought was they're obviously going to make a Lambent Death Star. But probably not that.
Gotta find a way to blow it up.
And well, there's gonna be this giant Lambent crystal underneath this temple that's they're gonna use for the Death Star. it would be cool if they could shape, I guess, a way to introduce, I guess I'm asking for midichlorians, a way to introduce the Force into the Yuuzhan Vong. Where there's some organic... Dang, it really is midichlorians, isn't it?
Hey, people love midichlorians. They're wildly successful in Star Wars.
So some way to connect the Yuuzhan Vong to the Force, where all of a sudden that advantage is given back. That would be cool. Just the shapers. They start shaping a weapon, or they can tactically interrupt their communications and they start sneaking up to the Villips, or you know, something like that. I don't know.
Okay. So Villips, they could repurpose Villips somehow. For sure. Yep. You want me to tell you one? I don't think it's spoilery. One advancement they are going to make eventually, I don't remember exactly which book this is introduced. It might be Dark Journey. The Jedi figure out how to use the Dovin basals as gravity well projectors to the front of their X-wings to then suck in shields and then blow past them. It's all a little complicated, but it's pretty cool.
Star Wars physics.
Yeah. They can suck the shields and blast them. There you go.
That's not how shields work.
Nailed it. if you can't shoot them, suck them. That's what I've always said. Suck the shields. Moving on. So there's a moral dilemma here, and this will be the last one for tonight. There's a moral dilemma with Jaina and the Yuuzhan Vong ship womb. You've got Kip and the non-combatant civilians that Rick thinks should be obliterated anyway. What choice would you make, Rick, with this moral dilemma? You're in Jaina's Jedi boots. Kip's pressuring you. You discover the truth.
Oh,
those aren't super weapons. What then would you do? What's the right move? WWRD, what would Rick do?
First of all, Jaina's Jedi boots better become a boutique in what's it called? Galaxy's Edge. Like, that would be great. But I feel like in that conflict, like the military conflict they're in, they were already too committed that she couldn't do anything else but finish the mission. And people were dying already. And so I think the right order of events happened where afterwards she's outraged. Afterwards, there's a huge, you know, confrontation. But I don't know if she could have done anything different, you know, because she was fed wrong information. She was misinformed.
Yeah. Now, you think that there's like a perhaps a moral dilemma concerning whether or not they're even innocent civilians? Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't pick up on that. So I'm interested to go back and see that. I just saw that they were ship wombs, and so I thought, okay, there's a tactical advantage to knocking out more ships, but I didn't either. I missed that or didn't consider that they're strictly civilian use. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest, I had to consult the Wook for some help on this because there's so many plot points in Rebirth that I get lost. There's a lot happening in that book.
Yeah.
That's part of why I like Conquest so much. It's so zoomed in, focused on Anakin. And so you can sink into the character interactions that he's having, Tahiri and then Yim and Vuabra Pung. And so concentrated effort there in one direction, which I love. So Conquest, absolute stamp of approval. It's one of the main reasons I encourage people to read New Jedi Order. So you can get to this. You can really see the heart of a Jedi, somebody who then has to befriend somebody who's from the other side of the tracks. And their philosophical conversations, his with Rapung, are really compelling. And Keyes writes that dialogue very well, represents both sides of that, leaves me like, oh, man, they're both making great points. And I think it's really well done.
Something we didn't think of, but it just made me think of it, that we didn't talk about, this really caught my attention, but the way that the Yuuzhan Vong are offended when you call them the Vong, you know?
Oh.
Like, there's a whole, there's something there that we haven't really gotten into that we're barely understanding their language and their culture, but just the way that the Prime Galaxy folks are even talking about these people or viewing them, like, they're clearly not seeing them the same. And it's an us versus them, you know, through and through. And so it's... I don't know. There's a lot of
The only person who has attempted diplomacy was Elagos Akla, who then was beheaded, and his bones were mailed back to the Jedi in a box. And so that he did try. Like, he saw that the only way forward is to try to understand each other. And they said, understand this, and obliterated him and put him in a box. So, this time, Anakin's able to sneak in behind enemy lines, and so he goes in as a slave and has to befriend someone who's the lowest of the low among the Yuuzhan Vong, and I find that very compelling, very compelling.
Yep, and then that coupled with Tahiri's knowledge when she comes out of that, like, lot of insight into the Yuuzhan Vong world.
Yeah, and then a little bit of,
come back to that,
a little bit of romance to spice it up too.
Yeah, just enough.
They get trapped in a storage locker together, and they think they're dying. So I guess if we're dying, we might as well kiss, right?
I guess. And
then, not me and Rick. We're in separate states.
Yeah, totally. I love how in this era of Star Wars books, there has that romance, but it's other than like the weird stuff we talked about with like the birth, there's nothing like super explicit where it's like, I'm uncomfortable reading this. I'm uncomfortable for different reasons.
Yeah.
At times reading these. But it's not like just super over sexualized, and so I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have got some fun stuff coming down the pipeline here for the summer. Though Legends Look Back, we've got a pretty strict summer break that we take because 1, sanity; 2, Rick's job; 3, Emily's moving countries; 4, Rick's moving, Freddy's moving states. I'm the only one with a stable existence this summer, so. I'm going to be cranking out some content. Trevor's going to do an episode or two with me. We've got an author interview or two that we're going to throw at all of you. Some fun stuff that's coming your way. So we're not going to leave you hanging with no content, though. Break from the formal live shows for June and July. We'll be back with a star-by-star roundtable in August. So keep up your New Jedi Order reading. That's your summer reading. We'll have a test on the first day of school, okay, once we resume. But in the meantime, there's a ton of great Youtini content to check out. In the meantime, Rick, what are some of those other Utini shows the folks can check out?
There's a lot and more coming all the time. So right now we have the Utini Avatar show, the Utini baseball show, the Cosmic Force, the Star Wars archives, and the flagship show, the Utini show.
Is that the flagship show? Corey told me this was the flagship show. Hey, you know, somebody call Dr. Bossman.
I mean, we're the flagship show of the Utini Vault, maybe, but, you know.
We're the longest-running current Utini podcast at the moment.
Hey.
something.
Yep.
So, that's cool. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us tonight. Now, thanks to the proud members of the United on Patreon. A special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bazinski on our High Council, and James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo at our Captain tier as well for their amazing support. Catch us every other Tuesday night at 8:30 Central, except in the summer, at youtube.com/@UtiniVault. Ring that bell if you want to get notified whenever we go live. Remember to sub to the channel and leave us a review in your podcast platform of choice. Use that summer break wisely, y'all. Leave us some reviews. In the meantime, if you'd like your thoughts read on the show, you can email us at legendslookback@utini.com. Rick, remind me to check that email tomorrow. We're on Twitter at legendslookback, also known as X. Let's keep the party going and hop over in Discord, where we are continuing the conversation with other Utinians about this week's episode in the hashtag Legends Look Back channel. Nope, hashtag Legends Books channel. And in fact, no matter what Legends book you're reading, day or night, no matter what time zone you're in, if you pop over in that channel, I guarantee you somebody will be willing to talk about that book with you. And that's one of the coolest things about our community. I love it for that. All right, that's it for us. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and let's keep on expanding the universe together. May the Force be with you.
This is a Utini broadcast.